Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Philippine police and disaster officials say at least 133 people are dead and dozens of others missing as a tropical storm triggered mudslides and floods. Multiple deaths reported, and police say 12,000 people have left their homes for higher ground. The UN Security Council unanimously agreed to impose another round of sanctions on North Korea, targeting sectors that fuel its illicit weapons programs. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley.
On November 29th, Pyongyang launched an intercontinental ballistic missile. This was another attempt by the Kim regime to masquerade as a great power while their people starve and their soldiers defect. But for the international community, this is an unprecedented challenge from a defiant state. So we have leveled an unprecedented response. This resolution ratchets up the pressure on North Korea even further, building on our last resolution, which included the strongest sanctions ever imposed on them.
And the new resolution builds on three earlier rounds of tough sanctions imposed on Pyongyang this year. Some council members also noted that North Korea appears to be illegally exporting coal and acquiring prohibited oil through deceptive shipping practices. The FBI has arrested an American man who allegedly plotted a terrorist attack on a popular tourist site in San Francisco to be carried out on Christmas Day. Federal authorities announced Friday they arrested 26-year-old Everett Aaron Jameson of Modesto, California. Jameson allegedly told an undercover FBI agent that he planned to target the heavily visited Pier 39 in San Francisco by remotely detonating explosives and then shooting people with a rifle as they fled. This is VOA News. The U.S. is providing Ukraine with weapons in an effort to help the country with its fight against Russian-backed separatists in the eastern part of the country. The U.S. State Department said in a statement that the decision to provide Ukraine with enhanced defense capabilities is in keeping with the effort to help Ukraine build its long-term defense capacity to defend its sovereignty and territorial integrity. That statement added that the U.S. assistance is entirely defensive in nature. The California wildfire that continues to blaze through more than 100,000 hectares is now the largest wildfire in the state since 1932. The so-called Thomas Fire has been burning in Southern California since December 4th and has scorched more than 110,000 hectares. Fire officials say more than 2,800 fire personnel continue to battle that blaze. One firefighter has lost his life. Another civilian died. Officials say that the fire is 65% contained and any new burned acreage will be due to controlled burning operations. Thomas Fire has destroyed more than 1,000 structures and cost more than $177 million. The International Olympic Committee says it has banned 11 Russian athletes for life and stripped two more Olympic medals from Russians, one during the 2014 Sochi Games. The man accused of deliberately driving into Christmas shoppers on a busy street in the Australian city of Melbourne has been charged with 18 counts.
18 counts of attempted murder and one count of conduct endangering life. Those are the charges for Saeed Nouri, who was behind the wheel in Thursday's vehicle attack in Melbourne. He appeared in court on Saturday, accused of deliberately plowing into Christmas shoppers at one of the busiest intersections in the city. Police say the 32-year-old is known to have mental problems and to use drugs, but they ruled out terrorism as a motive for the attack. Nouri will next appear in court on Wednesday. It's also been ordered for him to be assessed by psychologists. Officials say 12 people are still in hospital, including three who are in critical condition. The attack has prompted a plan for increased police presence at Melbourne events as the holiday season comes into full swing.
That's Reuters' Grace Lee reporting. French President Emmanuel Macron arrived Friday in the capital of Niger on a trip designed to bolster the morale of the French troops in the country who are fighting extremists. The French president was welcomed to the capital city by his counterpart, Mahamadou Soufou. Two leaders are meeting to talk about African forces taking a more prominent role in the fight against jihadists. The former colonial power has thousands of its military service members in Niger. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
As some people told me, they just want to get it over with because this election they feel has dragged on for so long, and they just want to get it over with and let the Liberian people choose who's going to be their next president.
Liberian soccer great and Senator George Weah campaigns in the capital, Monrovia, ahead of the presidential election runoff.
I'm sure that our supporters and friends and family members and I are very excited. I am very, very excited that we're able to go through it, especially with my absence from the country and having very strong personalities that are able to see us through.
Former Sierra Leonean Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana plans to return to the country to contest in the March 7 presidential poll.
It is a process that has exposed the devil of the game. It is a process that has told Ugandans that we are no longer in a democracy, that we are in a military junta. It is a process that has told us that all the declarations that we are doing now are just meant for one man to keep him in power. That is President Kaguta.
And the Ugandan opposition plans to legally challenge the constitutional amendment which allows President Yoweri Museveni to seek a sixth term in office. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The very brief campaign period for Liberia's delayed presidential runoff election is down to the wire this weekend. The candidates competing are former soccer legend and Senator George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, or CDC, and incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party. Voting is this Tuesday, December 26, the day after Christmas. Well, today, Saturday, Weah's CDC is having its final rally before Tuesday's vote. My colleague James Batty has just arrived in Liberia for the runoff vote. I reached him a short while ago via telephone link-up in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Good evening, James.
As you said, Senator George Weah's coalition is holding its final rally today at the Samuel K. Doe Sports Stadium, just outside the capital of Monrovia. Earlier this morning, I caught up with some of the Weah supporters as they were marching on their way to the sports stadium, and I had a few words with some of them. If we can listen to some of the audio.
Okay. Our supporter by George Weah from Africa, from Daniel, he took me from Adra School and brought me back to Liberia and educated me from high school to college level. I think he said you. He's doing everything for me for the rest of my life.
I support George Weah. Why? He has the mind of the people, the mandate of the people, and then the people believe in him. He has love for country.
But let me tell you what people say. They say he is not educated.
But I don't know how you define that. George Weah went to school, right? In the state, right? He's acquired what? A master's degree, right? At Dufferin University, right? So when you say the people say he's not.
All right. So why do you think George Weah is qualified?
George Weah is qualified because he has love for the country. We want someone that will unite the country or unify us, and I know he can make a better Liberia to go to another standard for tomorrow, better tomorrow.
All right. Now, so James, we heard the vox pop of some of the supporters of George Weah. What is on the campaign trail for tomorrow, Sunday?
We haven't heard from Vice President Joseph Boakai's camp. In fact, I was checked with some of his key advisors. I'm told that he is up country in, say, Nimba County and Bong County campaigning there. So I'm not quite sure if the Vice President party, the ruling Unity Party, is also going to have a rally on Sunday. As you know, Sunday will be the final day follower. Christmas Day is on Monday. I'm assuming there will be no activity so far. There's no political activities, but everyone will be celebrating the Christmas Day. And then Tuesday will be the runoff election.
What is the atmosphere, particularly in the capital, Monrovia, and what are you hearing from other parts of the country in readiness for the election?
People are in a festive mood. First of all, Peter, you know, it's Christmas time around, and people here, it's a time to be happy, to meet with family members, and that's what most people are doing, going to the marketplaces. But at the same time, also, they are in a festive political mood. People are ready to vote. I was, at first, when the Supreme Court made the ruling, I was thinking, I said, whoa, how do you have an election on the day after Christmas? But that's not it here. People don't think that way. They are in a feisty mood. They are ready politically to vote. And some people told me they just want to get it over with, because this election, they feel, has dragged on for so long, and they just want to get it over with and let the Liberian people choose who's going to be their next president.
That was my colleague James Batty reporting from Liberia. He spoke with me from Monrovia. The Sierra Leonean opposition party, the Coalition for Change, or C4C, received its official party certificate on Wednesday. This allows the party to choose a presidential candidate to compete in the upcoming March 7 general election. The opposition party plans to choose former Vice President Samuel Sam-Soumana to lead the group as the presidential candidate ahead of the election. President Ernest Bai Koroma sacked the former vice president, although a recent ruling by the ECOWAS court found his expulsion unconstitutional. I caught up with the former Sierra Leonean vice president in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, as he readies to return to Sierra Leone to campaign in readiness for the election.
Today we are blessed to have a certificate, which is the visa that we have to get into the next elections. I think what it is, and I'm going through that process, I'm sure that our supporters and friends and family members, and I'm very excited. I am very, very excited that we're able to go through it, especially with my absence from the country and having very strong personalities that are able to see us through. So I say thanks to them, and I'm grateful to God Almighty that we're able to go through this.
Mr. Vice President, what is your next step now that your party has received the official recognition to participate in the elections? You are the moment in Ghana. When do you return to the country in anticipation for the election?
I'll be back in Sierra Leone very soon, and I hope to be in Sierra Leone this December. We've concluded what we have to do, and with that now I can go back to Sierra Leone this December.
Mr. Vice President, before you left Sierra Leone, there were some concerns that you could have been arrested after you were pushed out of the vice presidential position. Now, do you anticipate facing any similar problems when you return this time to contest or challenge the ruling APC party?
Well, you're very correct. There were rumors that they were trying to stage manage issues to implicate me on the things that I was not responsible for, or setups that they were trying to do in order to illegally arrest me, to keep me quiet. But if you recall that I went back in April and I registered for the elections, which I did. And you're very correct, coming back. Few issues that surrounding my diplomatic passport that was retrieved. But yet I was very law-abiding and I surrendered it, and now I have a regular passport like any average Sierra Leonean. I'm proud of it, notwithstanding that, I am not afraid. I have not committed any crime. But what I have done is to redeem the people of Sierra Leone, and that is including President Koroma himself. So if I have to go back, I think President Koroma should also applaud me for my bravery and my effort in making sure that the Constitution of Sierra Leone has been protected, and that nobody of them can repeat such unsavory situation for post-conflict country.
Mr. Vice President, some are saying that your stay away from the country has eroded your popularity, which they said could undermine your chances of providing a stiff challenge, the former foreign minister who is the presidential candidate of the ruling party.
The name Sam-Soumana is a household name today. I don't have to be introduced like Mr. Samura Kamara, who is not popular. They don't know him. If Kamara is brave, then he shouldn't have somebody to hold his hand to run around like Kuruma is doing. He could have been brave enough to stand on his own. But I'm not worried about that because the people of Sierra Leone need a change. And knowing that what they have gone through in the hands of the APC and the SLPP, they deserve a change in the positive direction. And what we need in Sierra Leone is a visionary and selfless leadership that can create the transformation that we need. And that is to say that we need transformational leadership. So I would advise Mr. Kamara to have retired early, and that he is now in his late 60s or early 70s, in order to give leadership the chance that is the dynamism that is required in the world today that we are trying to bring to play.
Mr. Vice President, realistically, what do you think your chances are of winning the presidential election and becoming the next president of the Republic of Sierra Leone?
The electorate of Sierra Leone have no hesitation that, one, they have decided that they want a change. They are sick and tired of this musical chair of red and green also, that being the APC and the SLPP. And precisely when we look at all of this, what do we need to do? We have been going through this ordeal for so long that the red and green has created tribalism and despotism in Sierra Leone. So we have to look at Sierra Leone from a broader perspective, putting our country first, putting nation first. In addressing these issues, we need to have a paradigm shift from what it used to be to a new Sierra Leone, a Sierra Leone that is for all, a Sierra Leone that caters for everyone, irrespective of your tribe, color, religion, or region that you come from. And this is what the vision of the Coalition for Change stands for. And so, having said that, it's a collectivity that we're going to look at. And that brings the advantage to the Coalition for Change. And the narrative is very clear. It's there already. We, the people of Sierra Leone, are yearning for.
Samuel Samsumana is the former Sierra Leonean vice president. He spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Accra. The opposition in the Uganda parliament plans to legally challenge the amendment of the constitution, which will allow President Yoweri Museveni to seek a sixth term in office. Until the age limit was removed Wednesday, the constitution bars citizens who are 75 years or older to run in a presidential election. But parliamentarians from the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement or NRM, in a majority vote, removed the age limit. The bill passed with 315 votes, with 62 against, after 3 days of chaotic debate in which some opposition lawmakers were suspended while others walked out. Winnie Kiza, the leader of the opposition in parliament, told me the decision to amend the constitution effectively makes President Museveni a life president, which she says is illegal and an affront to the people of Uganda.
I can say that the vote was not reflected in the views of the people. Why? When members knew they were going to vote against the views of the people who sent them to Parliament, they negotiated with him for an extension of 2 years of their term, just because they know that majority of them will go back to the constituencies and lose an election. But because they knew the vote was against the will of the parliament, they knew the vote was out of intimidation, coercion, and bribery, the reason they chose.
You said that what they did, the process was fraudulent. But how can it be fraudulent when due process was followed, debates were heard in parliament, some opposition members behaved unruly, they were suspended, but due process was followed in parliament? Why do you say it's fraudulent?
You can also see that when we are going to vote, some of the members of parliament were elected. And you could also imagine when the motion produced a private sector bill was introduced in Parliament, forced that protested in Sierra Leone, that came into the chamber to torture MPs, to attack Parliament, to terrorize MPs, many of whom were badly injured, and the nation could not even afford to treat them. They were right out of the country for medical attention. Some of our members were jailed. We can't say this was a process that was normal. It is a process that has exposed the dictatorial regime. It is a process that has
told Ugandans that we are no longer in a democracy, but we are in a military junta. It is the process that has told us that all the declarations that we are doing now are just meant for one man, to keep him in power. That is President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni. Even the parliament itself brought it across to a lot of rules that are supposed to govern the processes of legislation in parliament. And some of us are on the view that we take it to the court of law. The beginning process, we took it to the court of the African Court of Justice. There couldn't have been a formal process that could have taken place when we had checked it down.
You said you are taking it to court. Why would you take it to court when it has become law? President Museveni has signed that bill into law, so it takes effect basically immediately.
Whether it is law or not law, we have seen some other laws being nullified. If people can recall, when we passed the homosexual bill, we passed it, but people took it to court and it was outlawed. So, even if we have passed it, as long as the process was null and void, it's a null process, it's a void process. So, there is no reason why the court of law cannot be with us. The only problem we have is that the Ugandan court, the judges in there are appointed by Museveni. So, the possibility also for having a prayer hearing is also there. But literally, the process was fraudulent.
What do you think are the prospects of this move to take this matter to court? Do you think you have a fair chance of winning and outlawing what President Museveni has signed, which was legitimately voted upon in Parliament?
We are imagining it was legitimately passed. What we are saying is that it was legitimately passed, and this is the reason we want to go to court. But secondly, we also want to continue exposing them the more. We told people that all arms of government are no longer in control. We have been telling Ugandans that all institutions of government have been murdered by one man.
Winnie Kiza is the leader of the Ugandan opposition in parliament. She spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. The Commonwealth Secretary General Patricia Scotland has called on Cameroonians to embrace peace and unity as part of the effort to resolve the ongoing Anglophone crisis. The Secretary General met with all stakeholders, including President Paul Biya, officials of the government, as well as leaders from the English-speaking regions of the Central African nation. She was in the country for a five-day official visit to help find a solution to the crisis. John Fruin, the founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, met with the Commonwealth Secretary General in the capital, Yaoundé, this week. I reached him via telephone link-up to find out details about the meeting with Secretary General Patricia Scotland.
To the best of my understanding, the meeting went very well. But we met Baroness Scotland, and we had useful discussions, and we explained and exposed to her the issues affecting the Anglophone regions and frowned at the idea that she never came to the field. But luckily for us, she'll be going to the Southwest tomorrow to listen to people on the field and see for herself the reality. We exposed all these things because Cameroon, as a member of the Commonwealth has a right to discipline Cameroon if they don't keep to the norms.
So, Mr. Fruindi, what assurances did Baroness Scotland give you about helping to finding a solution to this crisis?
She had debated these very issues in the House of Lords in England, so the issues were not very new to her. We revisited the issues and emphasized that things have been pushed to the extent where the youths who were not with us in 1990 to form the party cannot withstand things again, and they are now in the forest. We told her that if Nitabia had taken an earlier step to resolving this, as the Englishman says, as teaching time says nine, these issues could have been discussed and debated and concluded. But he didn't do that at all. So we recommended a meaningful, useful discussions, dialogue. And we recommended that you tell Mr. Biya to grant unconditional amnesty for Cameroonians on the run to come back, both the teachers and the lawyers, and to release all those that are locked up in prison, unless one that they come across that has a bad criminal record.
But the president has said recently that the period of dialogue is over, and that those he described as secessionists who have been creating instability in the areas of the Anglophones need to face the full rigors of the law for taking the law into their own hands, killing people, including police and security operatives who have been mandated by the Constitution to protect life and property.
Well, we agree that people who have been killing should be punished. Let the members of the armed forces that have shot innocent people be punished. And let the people that have killed members of the armed forces be punished. Punishment should not be a one-sided game. The uniform that the members of the armed forces wear is not a license for them to kill innocent people. The hungry youth, the unemployed youth, those who have been marginalized have gone to the wall. Their backs are on the wall and they have to fight back. When a child is shot on his bed in their home, when a child is shot on the mouth, who's harvested a proper washing to go eat, who is being punished for that?
What are your views, particularly when it comes to those who are agitating for secession, who are saying that President Paul Biya has refused or seems to be disinterested in trying to find a solution to the ongoing crisis, so there shouldn't be any dialogue at all? What are your views about that?
The president, I'm afraid to say, is unreasonable. One, he cannot wage a war against his people. Two, he cannot put a block to dialogue. No matter how wicked the child is, when you beat that child and drive the child out, you don't lock the door on the child, you still leave the door open and see what you can do to dialogue with the child. But if Mr. Biya tells you you cannot dialogue with Anglophones, it's all over. It meant that he's just proving himself true that he took Anglophones as slaves and he can do anything with them. Let me tell the world the one time that he's ever dialogued with Anglophones on issues that concern them. Let Ahijo make him the secretary of a commission he set up to look into the Anglophone issues. So these are issues he knows. And if he knew them and doesn't want to solve them.
So how confident are you that the Commonwealth Secretary General will be able to convince the president, and for that matter the government, to try to negotiate or enter into dialogue with groups from the English-speaking areas to find a solution to this crisis?
The former Secretary General, Chief Anyaku, on supporting the admittance of Cameroon into the Commonwealth Club, assured us that the only way the Commonwealth could raise a finger against Cameroon's wrongdoings was to allow them come into the club. Otherwise, they could not talk from outside because they had no moral standing to talk to Cameroon when Cameroon was not a member of the Commonwealth. We gave them our support, and we believe that with what we did and Cameroon admitted, Mr. Biya cannot be above the international organizations that are trying to bring world peace, love and justice in the different areas.
John Fruindi is the founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front. He spoke with me from Bamenda. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon rages on with no solution in sight. President Paul Biya blames what he says are secessionists for killing police officers and gendarmes stationed in the English-speaking areas. The president vowed to ensure the perpetrators are punished. Southern Cameroon Defense Force, or SOCADEF, is one of the groups blamed for the killing. Joining me live in the studio is Dr. Ebenezer Kwanga, leader of the Southern Cameroon Defense Force, or SOCADEF. Welcome to Nightline Africa, Dr. Kwanga.
Thank you.
So let me ask you, why take up arms against a legitimately elected government recognized by the Constitution and the international community the world over?
That's quite an interesting question. First, I do not recognize that there is a government in Cameroon.
Why?
I see it as a regime. I see it as some sort of a civil...
Cameroonians voted for the president.
Voted?
They did.
Well, if that is the way voting is supposed to go around the world, then there should be no complaint about dictatorship around the world. Biya is a dictator, period. He's been there, it's almost 38 years. Are you trying to tell me that the entire people of Cameroon, including my own people, there is just nobody who is fit enough to take over
so
that position?
So why take up arms against the government?
No.
Killing gendarmes?
We haven't
killing
taken
police.
Up arms. We haven't taken up arms. Arms were taken up against us for the last 56 years. And for the first time, our people have resolved that it is time for them to defend themselves because the international community really doesn't care.
Well, but police officers have been killed. Gendarmeries have been killed. Places in the English-speaking areas have been torched, including villages, where young men and women supposedly have been hounded because of actions of SOCADEF. How do you defend that?
We haven't killed police officers. We haven't killed gendarmes. We haven't killed military officers. We have attacked a terrorist group they call Militaire Camerounaise. That is a terrorist group that has been attacking
our
people.
Who designated it as a terrorist group?
Well,
they are mandated by the Constitution to protect life and property.
No. Excuse me. There is first no constitution running Cameroon. Cameroon is there are more than three different constitutions. Biya gets up in the morning. The day he has discussed where with Chantal, he gives a slap on the right hand. The day he doesn't discuss is where he gives a slap on the left hand. This is a country which is run based on how this man gets up from sleep.
But he is the president of the country.
No, he is not the president of Cameroon. He is the president of his family, who is a dictator of Cameroon.
Well, if I may ask you this, do you really care for the people of the English-speaking areas? Because they are saying your action, the actions by SOCADEF, are imperiling their lives. Their lives are in danger because of actions taken by SOCADEF. Villages have been torched or burned down. Property have been destroyed. And then issues of human rights abuses, all in the name of SOCADEF.
I'm just from the ground. I haven't even reached my home. I left the airport and drove straight to Voice of America. This is what I want to tell you. I don't know who are those people who are telling you that their lives are in peril. For the first time, the Ambazonian people, the people of the former British Southern Cameroons, are able to have the opportunity to say, yes, we have come of age. We can defend ourselves. We are merely out to defend our homeland, to protect our people from a scourge of a tyrannical regime that has imbued so much pain and persecution on our people for the last 56 years.
But do you understand that your actions by the Constitution is treasonous? And those who follow you or those who are under your command, you call yourself the chief, commander-in-chief of the SOCADEF? Now, those who follow you are committing or aiding and abetting treason. And those people, including yourself, could be tried and prosecuted for treason.
One of the things I want you to understand is that when one engages on issues of freedom, there is no limit. The right to self-defense is an international right under international humanitarian laws. And we are not going to allow any individual or regime to define who we are. Nobody's going to define us. We will define ourselves. We are freedom fighters. We see Biya and his regime as terrorists, as people who have abrogated their own very laws that they have made, which, of course, are not good for us. So we are not worried about the whole issue of being called falling under the canopy of treasonable acts and or whatnot. All what we are concerned is, do we have the capacity to fight for our freedom? Are we willing to die for something we think is so important?
So, you are talking about an armed struggle. You're talking about a conflict here. You're talking about taking arms.
There is nothing wrong with an armed struggle. Nelson Mandela did the same thing. The Nkoto Wasizwe, when Pixley Seme founded the African National Congress, he never dreamt that one day Madiba and his group will come out through the Nkoto Wasizwe to plant bombs and do other activities. People fought in East Timor to free their homeland. FARC and the Colombians have fought for 50 years. There is no winner, there is no loser. You know this very well, that until we come out and defend our homeland, let me give you an example winning.
What is the end game for you? You give me that example, but what is the end game for you?
The end game is total and unconditional independence of the former British Southern Cameroons, the territory we now call Ambazonia. That is the end game. Now, what I'm trying to say is that for 56 years, they have been killing our people. Of recent, they murdered young men and women. Biya did not make a single statement. He was welcoming the female football team of his country, the soccer team. But let me tell you, when six gendarmes, six terrorists were brought down by Sokadef and his own allied forces, what did Biya do? He cut short a meeting in Dakar, went back to Yaoundé, and for the first time, he officially, because we have been at war, they have been fighting us. But in this war, one side is armed, and that is Milite Cameroonese. So for the first time, Biya officially said he is at war with us. Why? Because for the first time, the moms and dads, the children of La République du Cameroun will be able to bury their own as our own parents have been burying our own.
So what you are doing now is calling for a secession. So basically, you are a secessionist.
No, we are not seceding. We are separating from a failed union. We are not seceding because
we were never one. But the majority of Cameroonians are saying the Cameroon is united and the separation of Cameroon is non-negotiable. Cameroon will remain as one. What do you say to that?
That Cameroon will remain as one. It's freedom of speech. They have the right to say what they want to say. They do not have the right or the means to stop us from fighting for our freedom. We are not scared. We are not scared to do this. We've given Biya two options. Two alone. Let us go in peace or you pay the price, but we are still going to go. There is no way anyone is going to stop us. There is no way. This is a train that have left the station.
Critics of yours are saying that this, what you are doing now, as you call yourself the commander-in-chief of SOCADEF, is a personal aggrandizement, and that all you are doing is jealousy, infuriation, because of Sisiku Ayuk Tabe being recognized and treated with respect, and that you consider him as coming out of nowhere, and that is why you are so angry and going out taking up arms against the government. How do you respond to that?
That is a good question. Let me inform you that the Southern Cameroon Defense Force was founded in 1995. We brought down the Mongo Bridge. Go and check your annals. Paul Biya knows. Sokadef brought down the Mongo Bridge. Sokadef brought me out of prison. We have carried out a number of exploits back in Ambazonia. By then, there was no jealousy, Seko. So it has nothing to do with jealousy. From 1995, when we created the Southern Cameroon's Youth League and created the armed wing, Southern Cameroon Defense Force, it was in recognition that Biya and his acolytes will not be willing to sit on a negotiating table to have any meaningful discussion on how these two entities that came together can separate without bloodshed.
When did the issue of dialogue end with you? When did it end with you?
The issue of dialogue?
Yes.
It ended the very day that La République du Cameroun carried up arms against our people.
Is that right?
Right.
So what should the people of Ambazonia, as you call it, which is abominable in other parts of Cameroon, the majority part of Cameroon, what should they expect from you? Because they are experiencing untoward hardship because of your actions. Their words, not mine.
I'm just from the front line, and I spoke to more than 350 people. In a refugee camp. I've made it categorically clear to them that we are in to this for a long haul. It's not going to end anytime soon. But one thing I've assured our people is that at the end of the day, we, the people who are seeking freedom are going to be victorious. Because truth pressed to the ground will one day rise again. There is no way that we are going to stay or go back and live with a people who do not even recognize our humanity. It is not possible. So our people should prepare themselves for a season of suffering. But what is certain, whether I, Akwanga, will be alive or not, one thing is certain, that at the end of the day, Ambazonia is going to be a free land. Whether through me or through one or any other person, we are going to be a free people. We will never allow ourselves to remain a conquered people.
Well, we'll continue another time. Dr. Ebenezer Akwanga is the leader of the Southern Cameroon Defense Force, or SOCADEF. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Let's Bambe, bambe, bambe. malei yakala kuta kuta katwa engana bandi benaleka bandi sabasibulanga zitwala
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter and producer Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, those who get to the river early drink the cleanest water. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since 1987, the Lord's Resistance Army terrorist group, under the leadership of self-styled prophet Joseph Kony, has waged a guerrilla war against the Ugandan government. The group's purported goal is to establish a multi-party democracy that would rule the country according to the Ten Commandments. According to UNICEF, the LRA has abducted more than 20,000 children to use as soldiers, servants, or sex slaves. Its activities in the Central African Republic, South Sudan, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo have helped to destabilize the region and contributed to the violence that has displaced over 2.5 million people. For that reason, the U.S. Treasury Department imposed sanctions on Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army in March 2016. The group finances itself in part through elephant poaching and ivory trafficking. To disrupt their revenue stream, the United States Treasury Department has imposed economic sanctions on two individuals who use the illegal ivory trade in support of the Lord's Resistance Army, pursuant to Executive Order 13667. Executive Order 13667 targets those persons who contribute to the conflict in the Central African Republic. Okot Lukwong is the LRA's intelligence officer. He oversees supply logistics and has coerced civilians to provide him with information on government forces within the region. Lukwong is in charge of selling or trading the group's hordes of ivory. Musa Hatari, a merchant by profession, has traded with the LRA since at least 2013, supplying the group with ammunition, mines, weapons, food, and other supplies. Hatari buys regularly from the LRA, has sold or traded ivory from the LRA, and has promised to trade anything the LRA wants for ivory. Treasury will continue to target armed groups such as the Lord's Resistance Army and their support networks that rely on the global ivory trade and wildlife trafficking to finance their violent campaigns, said OFAC Director Johnny Smith. The U.S. government will not tolerate the actions of those who finance destabilizing activities in Central Africa, and we appreciate the cooperation of the governments of Sudan and Uganda to degrade the threat posed by the LRA.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.